Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another amazing episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find all the available information, sources cited, audio, video, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, this is our 123rd episode, and we'll begin with a bit of a callback to a story from several months ago. Of course, everyone still remembers the Kony controversy. Posted to my own cyberspacewar.com, but coming via InfoWars, Clinton wants new drones to hunt Kony. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton last Friday endorsed the advancement of drone surveillance technology to aid the U.S. in capturing fabled enemy Joseph Kony. Clinton was in Uganda speaking to President Museveni and surveying the current use of U.S. drones being used by the Ugandan military in Somalia to reportedly fight al-Qaeda-linked militants. Quote, "Now we have to figure out how we can see through thick vegetation to find Joseph Kony," she said, speaking openly about the U.S.'s need to improve drone surveillance capabilities. The secretary is riding the wave caused by the controversial Kony 2012 documentary released in March 2012 that to date has more than 92 million views. The film, which was created in order to spur widespread outrage and garner support for an invasion of Africa, depicted Kony as a ruthless African warlord that would kidnap children, butcher victims, and take women as sex slaves. "We have to figure out how to work with all the countries where he and his criminal bands are perhaps hiding. We have to put our heads together to find out what additional equipment and support you need to lead this effort to rid the world of this terrible man and his criminal behavior," Clinton said. Although most Ugandans have more of a problem with the now 30-year dictatorship of President Museveni than the infamous Kony, Clinton continues to beat the war drums to muster support for an invasion. Apart from the obvious attempt to keep the military-industrial machine churning and distracting from genuine events, the Kony 2012 documentary was funded indirectly by the Central Intelligence Agency through the film's producer, Invisible Children's connections to U.S. aid. Furthermore, it is widely believed that Kony hasn't even been in Uganda for 6 years, no longer holds any influence in the region, and is presumed dead, which reminds us of that other guy, James, who supposedly died on May Day 2011. But I digress. Clinton is also receiving backlash from China, who she indirectly accused of exploiting Africa's resources. The official Xinhua news agency said Clinton's cheap shots attempted to drive a wedge between China and Africa for the U.S.'s selfish gain. Noel Sharkey, professor of artificial intelligence and robotics at the University of Sheffield, and who recently appeared on InfoWars, expressed his fear that drones will start the industrial revolution of war in a penned piece that was in last Friday's August 3rd. He states, "Today's drones are like the Wright brothers' prototypes compared to what's coming next. Here's where our real danger resides. Automated killing is the final step in the industrial revolution of war, a clean factory slaughter with no physical blood on our hands and none of our own side killed," Sharkey wrote. If Clinton has her way, drone surveillance technology will surely be not only powerful enough to see through thick vegetation, but will likely be strong enough to penetrate rooftops and invade privacy. And James, I would add at the end, pretty much sell our very soul.
But James, I'm kind of confused. I could have sworn that Kony was captured via Facebook likes and masturbating in public. Wasn't that... I thought that was what got him in the end. No, okay, all right. Well, where do you even begin with this story? Obviously, the drones, this is just a stupid cover to sell to the public for the PR victory on why we need to sell drones to Uganda and the dictator Museveni, who we're in bed with there, because he's against Kony, so he's our man. Of course, let's not actually look into Museveni or what he's doing to the people of Uganda or the fact that he's been in power for decades and that there's a massive movement against him in Uganda. Let's not look at any of that. No, we'll just side with him because he's against Kony. But of course, that's all just the boogeyman cover, and that's what we would expect. I think the interesting part of this, for my perspective anyway, is the China angle. And as that article was noting, when Clinton was in Senegal, she was giving a speech where basically she was saying that the Chinese should be kicked out of Africa, basically, was what she was saying in code word, diplomatic code speak, and the Chinese, for some reason, took offense to that. And so I think anyone who's actually really watching what's going on with this African trip is seeing that there's a lot under the surface going on here about how China and America are, of course, battling for access to African resources, and the American paradigm of basically being the strong man on the continent and basically strong-arming their easily pliable dictators into giving them access isn't working as well as China now coming in with development loans and things to actually try to gain more of the oil and resources for themselves. So there's definitely a proxy war going on in Africa. I wrote about this in my most recent newsletter. I hope people check that out. But absolutely, I hope people are keeping their eye on this trip, because I think Africa is going to be something of a sticking point between America and China for the foreseeable future. And of course, we know that's what the whole AFRICOM system was designed for anyway.
So, James, on a brief related note on this African trip, meanwhile, Hillary Clinton swarmed by bees in Malawi, which, if I could just paraphrase St. Hicks, you know, it's base irony, but you can get a hoot. And I love the synchromystic memes of, you know, drones and bees. Our second story, James, comes from Threat Level. Court grants feds wireless access to utility records. Utilities must hand over customer records, which include credit card numbers, phone numbers, power consumption data, to the authorities without court warrants if drug agents believe they are relevant to an investigation, a federal appeals court said. The Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act of 1970 allows the authorities to make demands for that data in the form of an administrative subpoena with no judicial oversight. In this instance, the Drug Enforcement Administration sought the records of three Golden Valley Electric Association customers in Fairbanks, Alaska, suspected of growing marijuana indoors. The information subpoenaed does not need to be relevant to a crime. In fact, it may be used to dissipate any suspicion of a crime, Judge William Fletcher wrote for the unanimous three-panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The information subpoenaed need only be relevant to an agency investigation. Energy consumption records can be relevant to an investigation into a suspected drug crime. James, jumping down, we'll just cut to the chase and note that the appeals court disagreed with all the utilities' arguments. And basically, fortunately, the utility companies actually did try to fight this. They didn't immediately just roll over and hand over all the info. But the appeals court disagreed with all of the utilities' arguments, saying that the case was easily decided, James.
Wait, James, what's that sound? Oh, that's the sound of the Fourth Amendment being flushed down the toilet. For anyone who's in the American populace that still believes there is a Fourth Amendment, I think stories like this one's are a good way of disillusioning them of that. Because, once again, what is the point of an amendment against unreasonable search and seizure if there is absolutely no standard for that? And if courts are willing to rule that it's okay for cops to be searching your utility records, your name, your information, your checking account data, your credit or debit card data, all of this, your address, all of this information, just to dispel the idea that you might be involved in a crime, then what is the point of this this legal precedent at all? It's absolutely clear to everyone that there is no such thing as a Fourth Amendment anymore. It's just ridiculous that they can do this without even obtaining a warrant, which is basically a rubber stamp for them anyway. But it's just a further destruction of whatever idea that the Bill of Rights still applied actually holds in American society. But it's interesting to note near the bottom of that article, it says that the court ruled that there's customers have no expectation of privacy with their records when they with businesses, because businesses keep this information and it is owned by the business, not by you. So keep that in mind. With every single transaction you make, you are deciding to sign over your personal data to that company, and it's really up to them whether or not they comply with government search requests and public seizure requests, or if even if they don't comply with it, if the police will come in and the courts will okay it anyway. So it's a corrupt system from top to bottom, and again, people support it with their dollars, or they choose not to support it by not signing up. So getting off the grid in every possible sense is the only real solution here.
I'll briefly add in one other note, James, that this decision appears to be an end run around the Supreme Court's 2001 ruling requiring the authorities to obtain search warrants to employ thermal imaging devices to detect indoor marijuana growing operations. Again, the court ruled that the imaging devices used outside a house carry the potential to shrink the realm of guaranteed privacy. As a somewhat related note, James, is a story that I know you and I are both interested in and also comes from Threat Level. New Zealand police try to justify paramilitary raid on Kim.com. They have released the footage of the mega upload raid. James, have you watched that already?
I've watched a bit of it, yeah. It's interesting, but I think the legal wrangling over why they raided him in the first place is perhaps more interesting.
Uh-huh. So our third and final story continues the destruction of reasonable expectations of privacy, and we can get it from brasscheck.tv.com and also the always and fantastic activistpost.com. Copblock.org founder faces 21 years in prison on wiretapping charges for filming the police. According to court documents, Adam Ademo Mueller, journalist and co-host of a nationally syndicated radio talk show, Free Talk Live, has been indicted on 3 counts of felony wiretapping. The charges are a result of a vlog Mueller posted on copblock.org about an incident involving alleged police misconduct, which featured recorded interviews of on-duty public officials. Mueller's report focused on video recorded by a student's cell phone at Manchester, this is New Hampshire, I believe, Manchester's West High School, which depicted Officer Darren Murphy slamming a 17-year-old kid into a cafeteria table in October 2011. Although public officials told the student to delete the video, it ended up in Adam Mueller's hands instead. The case states that after viewing the footage, Mueller called the Manchester Police Department and West High School seeking comment. Mueller recorded his interviews with the on-duty public officials and then included them in a video report on copblock.org that publicized the allegedly excessive use of police force at the high school. The story went viral. Several months later, the indictments came, 3 felony counts of wiretapping. A public official who is on duty and in a public space has no expectation of privacy. The First Circuit Court of Appeals has already ruled in this in Glick versus Cunniff, said Ian Freeman, co-host of Free Talk Live. The person who should face consequences is the officer who threw the poor kid on the table during lunch at the cafeteria, not the journalist who reported about it. According to New Hampshire state statutes, in order to be guilty of wiretapping another party must have a reasonable expectation that their communications are not subject to interception, James.
Right. If I'm reading this indictment right, the indictment isn't about the footage taken on the student's cell phone in the cafeteria that shows the incident, and it isn't about the interview that Adam conducted when he walked up to the cop in the middle of the street and asked him some questions. This is about another video he did where he was phoning the police and he was recording that phone call, but he wasn't telling them that he was recording the phone call. I think that's what this indictment is about, and if I'm reading this correctly, and I'm open to correction on this matter, but if that is what this is about, then by the letter of the law, I think he actually did commit that crime in this case. So I think that this is a lesson for activists out there that they should be aware of these laws and whether or not they're right and whether or not they should be in place, they are in place. So I think we have to be smart about our activism as well. If I'm reading this correctly, and again, I'm open to correction, this is not legal advice, but if he had told the cops that he was interviewing, I'm recording this, then he would have had an out in that case. But again, it differs from state to state, and you have to know your state's wiretapping laws in terms of recording phone calls like that. So unfortunately, I think this is a bad case. The only real solution here is jury nullification. New Hampshire has just recently passed some new laws to help out with that. So I hope people will at least check out the page on CopBlock where they're talking about this and some of the solutions they offer, how to contact, how to get involved, and how to hopefully get jury nullification in this case.
James, we are pretty much out of time. This is New World Next Week, episode 123. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.